This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community. The Escape Hour, the podcast, is proudly sponsored by La Spaghettata. Over 30 years of food, family, and fun at 238 Lygon Street. Why not try them today? Look for the rainbow flag or call 9663 6102. Visit laspaghettata.com.au or find them on Facebook.
Hello, everybody. It's 1 p.m. in good old Melbourne town. Joysters, you're listening to The Escape Hour. My name's Russ Masterton, and across the way from me, I have Tad Lombardo. How are you, Tad?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm very well indeed. Good. And our third musketeer, the gorgeous Fiona, how are you?
I'm super, thanks.
It's great to have you on the show today. We're really excited, all three of us in the same room at once. God knows what's going to happen.
Exactly. Anything can go.
Dreaming about food and travel. Right. I mean, it's going to be good.
Well, big travel news this week. Qantas, the red rat, as I like to call it.
The red rat.
It announced its inaugural flight from Perth to London direct, and tickets went on sale, and very reasonably priced, I thought, for such a long distance.
It is a long haul flight, isn't it?
18 hours to be inside the tin can.
It's not the longest flight in the world, though. I think, is it Qatar Airline have that? Between Auckland and Doha?
Oh, they may do too. I hadn't thought of that, so that might be right. So this is great for Melburnians because what they're actually doing with this flight is it connects in many ways, but they're making Perth and Melbourne the hub for this flight of these brand new 787s that Qantas has bought. So for Melburnians and people in WA, you're connecting all the way from London through to LA in one seamless set of travel. So it's very exciting.
And it's also creating new tourism hubs, obviously, Melbourne's quite established, but for Perth, which is great.
Yeah, it's very good for them. But I was thinking about that. I was thinking, unless I particularly wanted a stopover, I think I'd be pretty happy with flying from Melbourne to Perth and then doing 18 hours nonstop and arriving in London the next morning. I'd be happy with that.
Yeah.
There was quite a lot of conversation in my office about it because, you know, we have people from Perth that I work with and people from London who I work with, and they were all very animated, checking the fares and started planning their trips almost immediately.
And I think it's going to be definitely the way to go. The first flight's already completely sold out, so everybody likes it. No, who doesn't like an inaugural flight? How exciting.
And it's a comfortable plane as well. I don't know if you've had a chance to fly on a 787 yet.
I have pretty with comfortable. A couple of the airlines, and they're roomy, and you don't hear the noise, and they've got beautiful mood lighting is the only way I can describe it. It's
automatic
fabulous.
Window shades, all that kind of stuff.
I know, technology. Yeah. Wow, we were only talking about that before the show, weren't we?
Yeah.
Tad, now that North Korean country,
yes.
You mentioned that they have the best in-food service that you've ever come across. Is that right?
I haven't actually experienced it myself. I'm just going on reports. But there's apparently a burger it's the only meal they serve on their flights. And they're calling it a mystery burger because nobody knows what's actually in it, but it's got like cult status. I was reading about, and it's this strange burger on a bun that sits on a doily in a plastic container, and that's what they serve. And again, who knows what it tastes like? I don't know, but it's just taken on this cult status amongst people that fly on Air Koryo, which is bizarre.
Well, who wants to give it a try? Can we get you to go to Phnom Penh?
I actually was suggesting to a friend the other day, I was quite excited about visiting North Korea, and he said, you're on your own.
isn't it Pyongyang?
It is. You'd think as a travel agent, I thought, it's not in my top 10 destinations to go to or sell. You would think I would know how to pronounce it, but thank you.
No, that's okay.
I do know a gentleman who had a tour company called the Axis of Evil Tours, where loved to visit Iran and all of the countries that George W. Bush put on his Axis of Evil.
Was he busy?
There was numbers of people that would be keen.
Okay.
Absolutely. Oh, and North Korea, I mean, for the travel curious is...
It's fascinating.
No, it's irresistible, really.
Yeah.
Well, I'm heading off to South Korea in November. So
that's as close as I've been from the demilitarized zone.
Yeah, so I reckon I could probably go live from the DMZ and tell you.
Yeah,
you
know, we would love
that. I might cross the border and say, could I have one of your burgers, please?
Yeah, exactly.
And let you know what it actually tastes like.
I don't know. We'll let you report on that.
Yeah. So if you're keen about a North Korean in-flight burger or about Qantas's new direct services to London, we suggest you go and see your travel agent because they know what they're talking about. You don't want to do any of that online mumbo-jumbo. You'll make a mistake and never live to regret
That's right.
The amount of times that I've made flight mistakes because I didn't have a travel agent to tell me what to do.
Yes.
Yep.
It happens so easily. Yep.
My industry loves people like you, Fiona. Travel agents, only way to go.
I like the personal touch.
Yeah. And we like looking after people too.
That's right.
But that's not why we're here today.
That is not why we're here at all. We have a special guest with us today, and we're sort of carrying on of our South American theme from last week.
Yes.
And today we have with us Alejandro Saravia, who is really the man responsible for bringing Peruvian cuisine to Australia and bringing it to the forefront. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for
coming in today.
Thank you.
Yeah, we got a ton of questions for you. And I think first off, the website for your restaurant in Melbourne here?
So it will be www.pastuso.com.au.
And people can make reservations through the
system. We open 7 days a week, lunch and dinner.
Okay.
I can vouch for Alejandro now because my husband's from Argentina. And there's that Latino English there, and I love it. Very sexy, very sexy.
Yep.
And I'm feeling
to get rid
can't
of my
help
accent.
It.
No, don't. And I'm feeling right at home already. So you keep talking, please. We love it.
Just talking about the cuisine, we're going to ask some questions about travel as well, and you know your insights into that too.
Yeah.
Perfect. But tell us a little about the Peruvian cuisine. A lot of people, it's still very foreign to a lot of people.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think once they do a bit of investigation, we've all sort of been exposed to it on some level.
Yeah. Well, just to go to Peru is around 24-hour flight.
Yeah.
Crossing the Pacific, so that's pretty interesting. Well, Peru, first of all, we need to understand where Peru is located on, and it's in the middle of South America. Surrounded by Brazil on one side, Colombia, Ecuador, on the south, Chile and Bolivia.
Yep.
And we border with the Pacific Ocean. So that gives us a lot of similarity with what the sea and seafood products that we can source and that we can find here in Australia.
Yep.
Then we have the coast, which is mainly desert.
Yeah.
There is a lot of very rich valleys,
right,
which we use to produce different fruit and veg, but mainly grapes.
Okay.
That is a strong influence from the Spaniards when they conquered Latin America. They established in Peru. They brought their grapes and vines and all that, and we are not the best producing wine,
right,
but we kill it with pisco,
right? Yes. Well,
which is it's better.
Yeah. And since you brought it up, what is your sort of the success of the perfect pisco sour? What would you say that would be?
Well, first of all, you need to use Peruvian pisco, and that's a known question. There is other countries that they claim to produce pisco.
Yeah,
it's a totally different spirit. There's a big discussion about who does it better, but it's comparing rum to vodka and gin. So
right.
We do pisco. I don't know what they do.
Yeah,
they call it pisco, but it's not.
Right,
the same.
It's not.
The freshness of lemon and lime juice.
Yeah.
It has to be freshly squeezed, basically because you don't want that bitterness. You want the sour from the fruit, not the bitterness.
Right.
Knowing how to squeeze it as well is very important. Not to get all the oils, natural oils from the skin,
right,
that citrus, the lemons and limes,
yep,
and just the juice. So being very gentle, mm-hmm, I like to use a fork, stab the half of lemon, and then just gently rotating the half of lemon on the fork, and then that gives you all the juices,
right,
and not the oils. Well, egg white, we do put a dash of egg white that gives more body and creaminess to the mix. But, it's just mainly using Peruvian pisco. I like to work my pisco sours with pisco quebranta.
Okay, yep.
Which is a variety of pisco. And then the lemon and lime juice.
And you don't sweeten it with anything?
Put some sugar syrup through and finish it with a dash of Angostura bitters.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
So, the perfect
drink. You know, to bring that, it's very refreshing. It's very tricky.
Yeah.
Because with the mix of lemon, lime juice, and the sweet of the sugar syrup, you actually don't realize that you're drinking a 42% alcohol content.
Right. You got to be careful.
That it's mixed with sugars.
Yeah.
So after the first one, it's like, oh, this is beautiful, so refreshing. Then another one and another one, and then you probably
they
will
go back
be
easy.
Dancing on top of the table.
That's right.
Which is always good
as
well.
Which is fine. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
So pisco is really, I mean, people have referred to it as sort of like a brandy style. Is that accurate?
As a general comparison, just to relate on something that the world knows better, yes, I will probably say it's more similar than a grappa.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
It gets distilled in copper pots.
Uh-huh.
That's why the comparison on the process of distillation of brandy. It does, one of the characteristics of the Peruvian pisco, which are very strict on, is that the spirit has to be clear completely, transparent,
right.
No color whatsoever. They distill in copper pots and they kept them or age it in a certain way in clay pots.
Right, okay.
So there is no contact of wood.
Right.
And there is no change on color.
Okay.
Also, the degree on alcohol of the product has to be between 38 and 42%.
Right. Okay.
So it can be less than 38. It can be more than 42.
So it's not pisco then, if that's outside of that range.
Exactly.
Right.
And the main characteristic is, it has to be produced in the Valley of Pisco
right.
or the surrounding valleys of Pisco.
Right.
And that's when we become very protective because we do have a tradition of why this spirit is called Pisco, because it's produced in Pisco, the town on the south of the coast of Peru. And the word Pisco comes from the Inca or the Quechua dialect Pisco, which it means bird.
Right, okay.
So there's a lot of history behind this. There's a lot of tradition. Yep. And
And there's no pisco in Chile. That's
there's
the
no
difference.
Pisco. I think they found a small town like 10 years ago.
Oh, really?
But that's chilly.
Yeah, exactly.
It's second-rate pisco, isn't it? Yeah, we understand.
Joy 94.9 is on air 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But sometimes you can't always be with us when you want to. Here's the solution. Here's the solution. Listen to your favourite Joy 94.9 show anytime with our Joy podcast service. Our team of over 30 volunteers pick out the best bits from around 60 programs that Joy airs each week, made available to you for free download. To find a podcast of your favourite Joy show, search for us in the featured providers section within the iTunes store, or find them on the Joy website, joy.org.au. Joy Podcasts. Any show, any show, anytime, joy.org.au.
You're on the Escape Hour with Tad and Russ, and we're talking all things Peru today. Hey, you guys, did you know a couple of Peruvian fun facts?
Tidbits.
Did you know that there are 4,000 different types of potato in Peru? I had no idea.
It was 5,000.
5,000?
Is it 5,000? Wow.
No, there's actually a potato research museum in Peru.
Really?
I would go there.
Yeah, it goes
definitely.
back to rescuing potatoes that we don't have, that we don't find regularly in the markets, but also that they stop producing. So they're rescuing crops that they are like Inca time and seeds and all that. Yeah.
So, Alejandro, where in Peru are you from?
I'm from Lima.
The capital. Yeah.
And the coast of Peru, in the center of the coast of Peru. It's actually the only capital in Latin America, in South America, that it's located in the coast.
On the coast.
Yeah. Mainly all the other countries are located in the highlands or the center of the country.
Because I know from a travel point of view, when we sell people to Lima. We put them on flights. We love Peru. We put them on flights with airlines like Air New Zealand, Qantas, or LATAM, and that'll get them into Lima in a reasonable amount of time. But most travellers out there would recognise that if you're going to go to Peru, the big places to go to are obviously Lake Titicaca, Machu Picchu, Lima, and the Nazca lines.
Yeah.
But now that we've got you in here today, where would you suggest people travel to?
Look, in the past 20 years, Peru has grown and has developed so much. And it's a consequence of the gastronomy going broader and being exposed around the world. That people are starting to be more interested to go to Peru. Also, there's a lot of stability in the country, economic, but also there's very secure now to travel through Peru.
Right.
My biggest tip will be, and this is what I like to escape when I'm in Peru, to go to the north coast of Peru.
All right. Okay.
Trujillo, Cabo Blanco, Máncora, which are still small cities or small towns that are very, very clever on the way they have been growing. I mean, you can find different restaurants, different clubs, and different modern attractions, but they are all encapsulated in this town that, in terms of the architecture and the growth has been established of let's preserve what we have and not destroy that and modernize it too much. Wow.
And so you were independent from Spain in the 1860s, and so would that part of Peru that you're talking about today still be very colonial and quite beautiful?
Yes, and the buildings are beautiful. There's a lot of balconies that are made of carved wood. The local governments are very focused on preserving those as attractions, free for everybody to see and wandering around the cities. The other thing is, I have a very strong connection. I mean, by history, I like to read, and I think there is a very strong sea and seafood connection with the pre-Inca cultures that were established around that area, like Mochicas, Chimus. They were the first ones working with different techniques to preserve fish.
Yep.
To work with a style of ceviche, which is our flag dish in Peru, like champion hero dish from the coast. And it's cultures that they were very focused on the sea creatures. They have a pre-Inca god called Nailam, which was the one that protected all the sea creatures, but also the fishermen.
Yes.
Yeah.
And there is a very strong effort to preserve those pre-Inca ruins that are made of, in contrary to Machu Picchu, which is all made of stone and rocks. All the archaeologic sites in Trujillo, in that area, are made of clay. And look, if I tell you now, you will see a site made of clay that was like done ages and ages ago, you will see, I'm probably going to see a couple of walls and that's it. It's incredible the way they have been preserved, the way you can actually go through it. You can actually see all the art on the walls, and it's made of clay.
Wow.
And it's amazing. Incredible. Like, it takes you back in time. It's beautiful. The energy that shares, or the energy that it comes from those sites, are very, very powerful.
I know Fiona was saying during the break, when's the best time you found out to go to Lima?
I think that May and June is a very good time to go. I believe, from chatting to different people, about a good time where the weather is excellent, where you have the least amount of rain for hiking and climbing. And then I think around October, November, because I wanted to go when I have a break in December, and it's not really an ideal time to go. But I reckon it'd be beautiful all the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know why everyone. Anytime. I'd go anytime.
Yeah. Have you been to Machu Picchu?
Yeah, I've been. I've been very lucky because I've been to Machu Picchu around 5 times.
Right. Wow.
And,
okay.
It's right. It's something that you know, like back in like back when I was a teenager, I remember. The first time I went to Machu Picchu, I was like, oh, yeah, well, yeah, that would be fine.
Yeah.
And you don't get too excited because for a Peruvian back in those days, it's like, oh, we know that Machu Picchu is there. We took it for granted kind of thing. But once you're there and you're experiencing the whole thing, and the best way to do it, in my opinion, is just to go not in a group, big group that are, you know, following schedules. Yes. It's just for you to have time to actually sit down, take a break, admire the scenery, think about what was happening there back in those days, and then you start picturing, and then suddenly it's very magical because suddenly you see a couple of alpacas walking around. Yeah. And it's like, whoa. Yeah. And then you will be looking at, it's probably the Inca happening.
So it is possible to do Machu Picchu self-guided. Like you don't have to go in a group.
No.
Which is fantastic because you don't always feel the need. I mean, you have to plan things yourself, organize your accommodation.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I hear it rains a lot going up Machu Picchu.
It does, but I think it's just a matter of, you know, looking at the weather. You know, you are Machu Picchu. A lot of people think that Machu Picchu is located on top of the Andean Sierras when it's actually more towards the Amazon jungle,
right.
The limit between the Andean Sierras and the Amazon jungle, and that's why the rains are very powerful there. And but also that's why there's a lot of forest around and jungle around Machu Picchu.
One of the things I found fascinating is that during Spanish rule or colonization, that was unknown, and it wasn't until an American historian actually discovered it in 1911, which is still relatively recent for something so ancient and so established as what that is. It's fascinating to me that it's taken that long, you know.
Hidden in the jungle there. Yeah. That's amazing.
Well, amazing.
The geography is very difficult.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
Imagine, like, now we have roads and trains and all that, and the trip from Cusco City to Machu Picchu, it's very enjoyable now because there is a luxury train. There is the train is actually pretty good.
Yeah.
There is a dome car, which is surrounded by just glass.
Right, okay.
And you can
sit down. Imagine crossing the Andean Sierras to go to the Secret Valley, which is where Machu Picchu is.
Yeah.
You know, just having this glass, this car made of glass, and you can see everywhere, and sipping on champagne or a pisco sour.
This is heaven.
See, Fiona and Ted are going now.
Exactly.
Mentioned two things, a glass dome rail car and some Moe, and you'll have them both on there.
So there.
Okay. Yeah.
Now, Russ, weren't you telling us the best time to get deals on flights?
I was. So what happens with flights to Lima, they certainly go on sale at various times of the year, but if you're thinking of going in 2018, certainly wait till the early bird deals come out in September, because you should be able to get an airfare for under around about $1,300 with the airlines that all fly there. Yeah, if you plan ahead.
Very good.
And South America is definitely one of those continents where planning ahead, far ahead, is the only way to go, because the closer to your departure date that you start to book flights and accommodation and tours and so on, the price goes up, up, up. And for many years in our country, it's been seen as one of those once in a lifetime, I've got to save 20, 30 grand to go there. And it's so not the case anymore. So with a little bit of competition on the route, and the airfares have come right down. So it's certainly is a good time to wait till the early bird deals come out in September and go then. So
that's really good advice.
Hey, Alejandro. With the other last question I've got about Machu Picchu before we go to break is everyone always asks us in the agency about elevation sickness.
Yeah, well, that's going to happen to everybody. Like every time I've been to Cusco, I've been sick, but it's It's a matter to take it easy. You need a day to acclimatize yourself, drink a lot of coca tea, walk slowly around, don't push yourself too much, and you'll be fine. There's some pills as well that they, I think they call soroche pills, because in the Peruvian slang, soroche is the way we call the altitude sickness. Right. And that helps you balance the oxygen on your body and the blood and the heartbeats as well, which helps. Yeah. But it's like anything else, you know. Like you climb the Himalayas, you will need time to acclimatize. Yeah. You climb the Andean Sierras, you need time to acclimatize, and especially if you're coming from a plane, a pressurized environment. Straight into the high,
Yeah, and it's probably a good idea if you do have health problems to ask your doctor if it's okay to actually do that.
Nowadays, all the hotels and hostels as well are very well prepared with oxygen. So you know, in case you need it, you have all the facilities there as well. But it's just a matter of, you know, taking it easy on the first day and then think about what are you gonna do, explore. On the second day, being there, don't try to do the Inca Trail on your first day straight away out of the plane, because it will be impossible.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to go to a break while we sip on Moe and enjoy our dome car in the the Amazon.
Eating ceviche.
I know, isn't it fabulous? It's so fabulous.
So good over here.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLD TIQ Community Radio Station Joy 94.9.
You're on the Escape Hour with Russ and Ted, and it's a very Latino Saturday afternoon. We've got Alejandro here talking all things Peruvian. Yes. Ted, have you been to Peru?
I haven't yet. I'd love to go.
Yep.
I'd love to do a major tour of South America. I've been to Cartagena, and then that's the only part of South America, and then Central America as well. But obviously need to do the other bits. And
fabulous.
There's a lot of food stuff to go. I mean, Peru has the number 5 restaurant in the world now.
Yeah, three of our restaurants are in the best 50s of the world.
So number 5 is Central. What are the other?
Central, then you have Maido, is one of the top 20.
Yep.
And then Astrid y Gaston, which is in the top 50.
Yeah, which is incredible.
Something, 33?
30, yeah, something like that. And it's
a really good achievement.
It's incredible, you know, and it just goes to show what the food culture in Peru is like. And you know, for a country of, 31 million people.
We're a lot.
Yeah, but it's just, you know, in South America, I think that's a good hit ratio to have three restaurants in the
But
in that
Peru,
list.
Peru, gastronomy for us nowadays is very important. Like, as I was saying before, you know, like, we went through really rough times in the 80s with a lot of terrorism and narcotraffic and very corrupt governments, insecurity in terms of politics, but also economy. If you see back of what the Peruvian to be a Peruvian once, we were not very proud at that time. Our soccer team is disgraceful. I'm not a fan of soccer, so I can say that. We're always in the tail.
Yeah.
We always had amazing sites like Machu Picchu, Chan Chan, which is the clay ruins that I was talking about in the north. Cities like Arequipa, for example, which are amazing, the Amazon jungle and all that. But we took all that for granted, and also because of the fact that we couldn't reach or travel inside Peru because of, you know, like insecurity and being very dangerous back in those days. We were not proud of that.
Yeah.
And everything that you heard about Peru in that time was like very negative, you know, talking about terrorism and drugs and all that. So it wasn't that we were like, oh, yeah, I'm Peruvian. No, we were like, oh, I'm Peruvian, but I'm Spanish as well, I have an Italian influence,
right.
Things like that. But since Gaston Acurio, which is the owner of Astrid y Gaston, started promoting Peru through gastronomy and showcasing the beautiful and diverse ingredients that we do have and we grow in Peru. There's actually a saying that we like to say in Peru, like it says that God might be Peruvian because we can grow absolutely everything. Right. Yep. And we do have it all.
Yeah.
From the coast and the Sierras to Amazon jungles. And there's always something that happens.
Yes.
That gas, we have gas. Petroleum, we have petroleum. Yep. Gold, we do have gold. Now with gastronomy, we have an amazing gastronomy. Different influences from Japanese, Chinese, African, Spanish, Italian as well in a certain way. Our own identity of local cuisine as well in the three different regions are very different. And all that makes a Peruvian now putting their heads up and say, I'm
proud.
Peruvian.
Very
forget
proud.
About forget about my Spanish heritage or Italian heritage or Japanese heritage. No. I am Peruvian.
Which is great.
So it's more than just Machu Picchu now. It's more than just, you know, having a shitty soccer team. Yeah. We have an amazing gastronomy that it's being recognized all around the world.
World class, yeah.
And that it's winning and kicking goals, you know. So that's amazing for a country that makes us proud of being who we are and to recognize where we come from. Has changed the development and has changed the identity of what it means to be Peruvian.
Well, I must say, in our industry, certainly the there's a huge surge in people wanting to go to Peru and South America. What how are gay and lesbian people seen in Peru? Are they treated well and well liked?
I mean, in my opinion, the two countries that are the most open to gay and lesbian communities are Colombia and Brazil.
Yeah.
After that, I might say that Peru is not far away of making progressive changes and not to be stuck into you know, like an old-fashioned mentality or approach. There's a lot of changes that Ed was sharing with me.
Yeah, we were talking earlier. About that, and it's quite interesting how it is a lot of like countries in South America are able to make these changes quickly and adopt them and adapt them. And you know, and sometimes you look at Australia and you know, we're supposed to be a first world country. Well, we are a first world country, and why does it take so damn long?
I think it comes on the fact that in the 80s we had a lot of a big amount of professionals or of the population of Peru that escaped.
Right.
They went to the States, they went to Europe, they went to Asia. They went everywhere except they didn't want to stay in Peru.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because Peru has evolved and it's offering more stability in being a professional, being an entrepreneur in the country. All those talents has come back to Lima or to Cusco or to Arequipa. It's not centralized anymore that Lima is Peru and everything happens in Lima. There are small towns. And having that experience of living overseas, being involved and surrounded by, you know, different cultures and seeing how, you know, how evolved or how progressive other countries are, that mentality is started to be more established in Peru, even being a Catholic country, mainly Catholic country. Nowadays, Peruvians are not afraid to question things to the Catholic community and say, well, why are you still thinking like that? That's not right.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly been my experience with I've travelled to Brazil and Argentina, and you know, you can get married over there, two women and two men, which is absolutely fabulous because you certainly can't in our country. And but you know, that people walk hand in hand down the street; it's just an accepted part of life. There's no biggie being,
gay.
Yeah, there isn't. Exactly right. Yeah. It's sort of like, oh yeah, there's a couple of guys holding hands, and you know, it makes you want to go down the street and give them a great big kiss and say congratulations. Yeah. That's so fantastic. Whereas we're a long way away from that here, aren't we? Which is which is very sad. But that's fantastic. So, is Lima really seen as the gay night capital in?
I think that there's. I've been away from Lima for a long time now. It's going to be probably 14 years now that I'm out. But the last time I was there, there's a big movement of, you know, like a gay and lesbian nightlife in Peru, especially in Barranco. Barranco is the bohemian part of Lima.
Great.
I love to go there because you find small wine bars, small cocktail bars, but still in a very colonial environment.
Yep. See, again, Fiona.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, she'll love it there.
I will. Yes. For sure.
People.
Cocktail bars.
Yeah. And art as well. Because people like Mario Testino, which a lot of people, they don't know, it's Peruvian.
We always thought he was Italian.
Yeah, no. Have established a museum in Barranco for all his work and inviting celebrities, you know, that he works with.
Yeah.
There is a lot of new a strong young artist movement that has been established in Barranco, and it's beautiful. It's beautiful, very, very cosmopolitan and very, very fun.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ Community Radio Station, Joy 94.9.
Welcome back to the Escape Hour with myself, Tad, and Russ, and we've got Fiona and Alejandro in the studio with us today. I've got some more questions about ceviche. I'm fascinated with it as a dish, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
We were talking earlier, or before the show, about it being really somewhat of an ancient art form, and just want to know if you can go into some of the reasons for that, and it was more of a way of preserving the fish from the coast to get it inland.
So one of the things that we need to understand is that you can find ceviches from Mexico all the way through Central America and South America. Peruvian ceviche, comparison to the other ceviches, it's been a flag dish for us.
Yes.
It's a champion Peruvian dish for the coast of Peru. It reflects a lot of what the pre-Inca cultures were doing on preserving fish.
Yeah.
We didn't have lemons and limes as a local ingredient, but we were using sour oranges and other sour fruits to cure and preserve the fish.
It's not actually cooking it. A lot of people say, it cooks the acidity cooks the raw fish.
The acidity does is cures in a certain way the fish.
Yeah,
we just had a sign lifted up at our window saying it's the best. That was from Anne.
That was from Anne. Yeah. Anne's listening. That's nice.
Yeah.
It's a way of preserving. Well, this area of Peru, which is the north part of Peru, of the coast of Peru, there's different. Stories that the history tells on how the ceviche started.
Yeah.
One was to preserve fish and to make sure that all the fish that they caught wasn't, you know, spoiled.
Yeah.
And that they can eat it in different days.
Yeah.
Using lemon using sour oranges or sour fruits to preserve, to cure these fish. Also, they were using sand or ashes to dry the fish, but never salt.
Right.
Because they didn't have much salt or salt mines in that part of Peru. The salt mines are more in the Andean Sierras or in the south coast of Peru.
It's fascinating.
Yeah. There's part of history that says that the Inca, when he was established in Cusco, he got to have the choice to have fresh fish fresh in Cusco from the coast of Peru. So all those methods were actually kind of working.
The distance between the coast? A fair amount of distance where fish would not last.
It's a 2-hour flight from Lima, I think, to
about 2,000 Ks.
So add on, you know, how difficult and aggressive is the environment and the geography on climbing mountains and going through deserts and all that. Yes. But they did manage to have Inca trails all around the empire.
Yeah.
That allowed them. They had a mail system that we call it. We called these runners Chaskis.
Yep. Mm.
The Chaskis. Their mission was to pass messages or to pass food or ingredients from running from one point to another one, and then give it to another one, and then that guy was doing the other bit of
the relay
track.
Peruvian relay team. Yeah.
Exactly.
That's cool.
So I've read lots about your potatoes, lots about your corn, 55 different types of corn.
Yep.
And I'm just going to go there because I've been asked to by some people in my office. What is it about guinea pigs?
Guinea pigs.
I had to go there.
They're beautiful. well, guinea pigs. We besides of alpaca and llama, we didn't have any livestock that we use for human consumption, mm-hmm. like protein, animal protein. The Inca, we got cows and goats and lambs. Through the Spaniards.
Yeah.
So that didn't exist in the Inca diet. Plus chickens, they didn't eat chicken mainly because what they saw was that the chicken put an egg and the egg give life.
Yeah.
Mm.
So they were respectful of the whole process of, you know, creating life.
Sure.
So the main source of proteins was alpaca meat. Mm. Or llama mm-hmm. in the Inca Empire,
mm-hmm.
fish, yep. river fish or lake fish or ocean caught in the ocean,
yep.
and guinea pig.
Right
now, guinea pig in Peru, it's breed in a way with grains, quinoa, hay. It's breed in a way that
superfoods.
Yeah, that it's going to be. Very meaty and, you know,
they're
super...
fattening up those little guinea pigs.
Yes, right.
So there's
but with love and care.
Yeah. They're breeding in a way so humans can eat it. I personally, I am probably going to get a few comments on this, but I'm personally not a fan.
Okay, fair enough.
I don't. That.
No.
Yeah,
no.
I don't think that that it's... And it's not because of the fact that it's a guinea pig. Mm. I'll eat it. I don't find an add-on to that. I wouldn't put that on my menu here in Australia or in any other part of the world, just basically because for me, guinea pig, you have to be in Peru to eat it.
Yes.
You have to be in Peru to experience the whole ritual on eating guinea pig in a local eatery or in a local restaurant, in a house,
yep.
if you're very lucky to get into a house and experience that, you know, cooking with fire and cooking in clay pots or a clay oven,
yeah.
And the seasoning and somebody that actually knows how to prepare it.
Yeah.
Because, yes, they're bred for human consumption, but there's not much meat, and they can be very chewy if they're not cooked properly.
See, I asked this question, didn't I?
You did, yep. And you're getting the answer.
You know what, Alejandro? I am going to have to get you to come back on because we're out of time today.
Okay.
It's been an absolute pleasure having you on.
Oh, thank you for inviting me.
I'm going to go home and feed my guinea pigs some quinoa.
Let's go have some ceviches and pisco sour.
Yeah, that's right.
I think we should have ceviches and pisco sour. That's going to be a guaranteed winner.
I think so, and we know we're going on a dome train where we can get a glass of Mui.
We are. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, we may try guinea pig. Who knows? But it's been an absolute pleasure, and we would love you to come onto the show again. So,
thank you for coming.
Thank you for coming in.
No,
Fiona and Ted, you're both on deck next week with an exciting show. Have you decided what everyone's going to be listening to?
Well, we are discussing a potential Japan story,
yes.
and we know how popular Japan is.
That's right.
Yeah.
And there's so many fabulous parts of Japan. I mean, having been there a couple of times, you just want to go back each time.
That sounds exciting,
that's
you guys.
Be good.
Well, that's the Escape Hour for this week. Goodbye, Ted.
Goodbye. Have a good week.
Goodbye
Fiona. Alejandro.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
The Escape Hour. The podcast is proudly sponsored by La Spaghettata. Over 30 years of food, family and fun at 238 Lygon Street. Why not try them today? Look for the rainbow flag or call 9663 6102. Visit laspaghettata.com.au or find them on Facebook.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.